papermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press. Now, you remember Mrs. Sadie Smuggery. She wanted money to buy a new...
It's actually a holiday today. No, it's not a holiday. It's a day of observance. We'll talk about that in a minute. But we're going to do a radio show that pays particular attention to that. The only one you'll hear about that. I'm Rex Smith of the Upstate American, formerly editor of the Times Union, here with my colleagues for this edition of The Media Project. My colleagues being Barbara Lombardo and Miles Reed and David Gustina. Barbara, you are...
Happy to be here, and I am the former executive editor of the Saratogian in Saratoga Springs and the Record in Troy, and I'm currently a journalism adjunct at UAlbany.
All right. Miles Reed, the editor.
I am the editor at the Gazette, and I'm also a huge NPR and public radio supporter, and so I know that today's a big day. We're celebrating Protect My Public Media Day, and long before I was a guest on David's show in the morning, which he wakes me up very early for, but long before that, I was a 30-plus year listener to WAMC. I love Vermont Public Radio, North Country Public Radio. You know, they were doing stuff that now people find stuff on podcasts, but for years, public radio has been doing that. So it's one of my bloodlines, and I just appreciate folks like David Gustina and Joe Donahue.
All right, that's enough, enough about David.
Enough.
That's enough about
he is my lawyer, you know.
No, but seriously.
Here's our producer, David Gustina.
Seriously, I'm the producer of the show. I host Morning Edition, The Capital Connection, The Legislative Gazette, and some other things. But the point is, you're all public media. All of us in this room are on public media, and you folks, most of you, especially you, Rex, and Barbara and Judy, are on almost every week.
Mm-hmm.
And the truth is, you offer a lot of insight into how the media operates, and you help our listeners understand that. And when the fund drives come around, we hear about that. And they do want to know how the media operates. I do think, and if you're thinking about public media, it's 2% of the national population that are tuning in. So there are a lot of people out there that really don't understand how media works, how we divide editorial from the news stories, how we go about the basic reporting that we do. So thank all of you for your years of service to this program and for taking some time out of your busy schedules to continue to do this, because I know each and every one of you, Rex and Barbara and Miles and Judy and Ira and Ian and everyone else that's been on this program really cares deeply about the media, and especially what we're seeing happening to the news of verification right now.
Well, that's a pretty good introduction to the issue here, folks. So the point that Miles made earlier is, as we sit here in this studio, it is so-called Protect My Public Media Day, and there is a demonstration going on outside NPR headquarters because of the clear intent of the Trump administration and his allies in Congress to zero out funding for public media. And, of course, the amount of money that goes to public media, the amount of taxpayer dollars that goes to public media in this country is minuscule by comparison to anything in the Western world. And so this is not really about saving money, of course. It's about shutting off a voice that is really powerful reporting. Again, as David points out, for not a huge audience, but for an audience that cares, for an audience that is actually much more issue-oriented than the average citizen. And so there is a place for all kinds of media in this country, but public media has been very valuable, which is why, you know, I've been doing this show for 30 years, during all those years that I was the editor of a couple of actually for-profit enterprises. I was the editor of the Record in Troy when I started on this show and became managing editor and then the editor of the Times Union. And during all that time, I wanted to make it clear to people that this is different. this entity makes a difference in these communities in part because it's a not-for-profit, because you take seriously this responsibility of doing this kind of reporting on the radio, which isn't necessarily commercially viable. If that 2% audience is a real figure, that is not enough to support a commercial enterprise. But it is enough, as your fundraising shows, to support this powerful voice in this community.
So yeah, let's and hear it. I think that one of the things that is increasingly obvious is WAMC Northeast Public Radio benefits from the loyalty of its listeners. And we saw that in the last fund drive. Without having to tell them, many of them said, I know they're going to try to take the money away. Don't worry. We'll be there for you. But on the inside of the building, I can tell you, people are nervous. People are worried. And our wonderful CEO, Sarah Gilbert, addressed our news team and said, listen, our goal at this station is to preserve the news. That you should not worry about. We are going to protect the news at all costs. We have to be able to share informed opinion. We have to be able to seek the truth and try to report it fully. We have to be an antidote to social media, which puts disinformation on the same level as verifiable information and has confused truth for a whole country that is now willing to believe that perception of something is the truth rather than a more objective, reasoned, informed view of a subject. And that means we have to protect, we have to stand up and fight for what we want, which is this news of verification model that is essential in a representative democracy.
Well said. Well, the question...
Rex, let me just say this. Forgive me for interrupting. But you haven't always agreed with this. Barbara, you haven't always agreed with everything WAMC or public media does. And we have to be able to accept criticism. And that's one of the things that we're starting to lose in the press, their ability to criticize. They seem to be warming up to the powerful and not being willing to stand up and say if they disagree or not.
Doesn't work, by the way. Doesn't work.
No.
The notion, for example, at the Washington Post, Jeff Bezos saying that the editorial page must be entirely focused only on personal liberties and free markets, which I think is code language for sucking up to Donald Trump.
Yeah, but easy for those that agree with that because they're easily redefinable as to what it means. They can get away with it. They can argue, well, how could you disagree with personal liberty and free markets?
And what scares me about Bezos's declaration about that, he is saying, well, other topics are well covered on the internet. And that I thought was insane because we want credible news sources to find out what's going on and to be a catalyst for change and to be able to take action. We can't just say you could find it on the internet. That was crazy.
It's an acquiescence.
Yeah, I think every bona fide journalist that I know in this area and across the country is pretty appalled with what Bezos has done. I've actually been fairly protective and supportive of the Post, even though there was a backlash last year. I could understand some of the decisions they made, but this latest one is such a departure from what the accepted norms of, you know, the press in terms of trying to cover things objectively. The only thing I can see is, and we've already started to see, they're seeing a lot of loss of talent, and I think they're going to have more and more. Their opinion editor, Shipley's left, and we see more folks are, and I think it's going to be a brain drain.
Well, when you learn about Bezos's background, he wasn't simply an altruistic person who thought this would be a great public service to take over a media company, a wonderful media company, in my mind. That as you learned more about him, and probably a lot of people already knew all these things about him, he was a libertarian. He was an investor in the Reason Foundation. So he was going to be bringing to the table his, I'm going to say, ultra-conservative views about things. And so I guess we were lulled into complacency, thinking that in the beginning he wasn't interfering in the newsroom when Marty Baron was there. He kind of felt like he was. Although, didn't they have a meeting with Donald Trump? It was all foretold.
The notion that billionaires are going to save the for-profit media in this country is a wonderful notion, but it's a myth. Clearly, it takes a remarkable billionaire to be such a person, and Bezos shows himself not to be. You know, the thing about the op-ed page is that it was created to give voice to differing views. It was really a great notion that citizens are better served by not having just one person deciding what they're going to read, which is what Bezos is essentially saying now. The Washington Post needs to reflect my point of view. Even when he uses a code word like personal liberties, what does that mean, really? Does it mean civil rights, voting rights? Whose personal liberties? The personal liberty of a black woman who can't afford child care so that she can have the liberty of holding a job at one of his warehouses, perhaps? I don't think they're going to be writing editorials in support of that if I understand Jeff Bezos's point of view. So it's just a flawed concept, and it shows us why, to get back to the original conversation, why we really depend upon outlets like Northeast Public Radio to give us a fulsome picture of the points of view around us and of the news of what's really going on.
Yeah, I've been thinking about this a lot when it comes to just the idea of human communication. And most of the time, there are these rules where we protect each other's face in interaction. Irving Goffman, Interaction Ritual. A great book if you want to read about a saving face. But when it comes to the rules, the underwritten rules of conversation, of civility, and now the actual rules and laws that are just being ignored, that are being twisted in a different direction. Why are we so shocked? Because Trump and his minions have not played by those rules. And when you don't, you can't have a society if we don't all agree on certain precepts. And one is, don't break the law. The idea that we have thrown all this up into question is really hurting the ability of the legitimate press to have any impact on people and their knowledge of what's happening around them.
Well, that's absolutely true. You know, when you see that so much of the influence now on what people think is through influencers, through podcasts that are intentionally biased, that don't actually do reporting. They traffic in conspiracy theories and in supporting partisan personalities. And those people now, of course, are getting a place in the White House press corps. They're getting slots covering the president in the pool reports that used to go to unaffiliated, to independent organizations like the Associated Press. And that is one of the great dangers that we see now as a result of the what seems probably to most citizens to be an arcane matter, who gets to select who goes into the press pool. The pool being when you can't fit everybody in the White House press corps into a room, there are going to be a handful of reporters. That rotation is now being run by the White House staff, and it now includes overtly biased, intentionally prejudiced news organizations that do not have the commitment to truth-telling that has been traditional in the White House press corps, the credentialed White House press corps. And that means that we really can't trust what we're even told is coming out of those events anymore.
Further obfuscating truth, right? Yeah. And, I mean, Rex, don't you own a suit? Where's your suit?
My suit.
That was the question of the reporter, right? To the leader of Ukraine.
Yeah.
Who is being attacked by Russia. We're hearing, oh, no, it was Ukraine who attacked Russia.
Well, remember that Russia was live streaming that meeting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Somehow they got in.
Well, and their language about America is changing and all this stuff is happening based on lies.
That's interesting, by the way. That brings up the question of fact-checking, because there has been some significant and some very impressive fact-checking being done by organizations. There was live fact-checking of Donald Trump's speech to the Congress, his 99-minute speech. PolitiFact, for example, did a live fact-checking, which was quite an amazing bit of work as they went through it and said, no, the Trump administration did not uncover $500 billion in fraud. No, in fact, he did not have 21 million people illegally enter the U.S. over the past 4 years. No, Joe Biden did not fly immigrants to the U.S. border. You know, there are so many of these that were being fact-checked in real time by PolitiFact. And, of course, the White House doesn't appreciate that. And most people don't see it.
Exactly.
But it is an important step anyway in the effort to maintain truth-telling. The difficulty is how you get that to the vast majority of American citizens. How do you bring that to people's attention?
And don't forget, Steve Bannon said flood the zone, which is what they continue to do, which really confuses when you're jumping from one story to the next because you start reading this, and oh, there's this other thing. It is a great strategy to keep the press jumping, dodging, and weaving.
Well, Trump's speech to Congress was included that quite a few lines about how the government was paying people who were 140 years old, right. 170 years old, 200 years old, blah, blah, blah. And that had already been well reported as coding matters and that nobody was really thinking or expecting or giving money to people who could not possibly be alive. Even I knew about this. So it had been well reported. The people who wrote his speech knew it. He knew it. The American people should know it.
Well, he knows. He knew that immigrants were not eating cats in Springfield, Ohio, too. But there's a disregard for that. And the problem is pointing this out only undergirds for many Americans who already have the bias in this direction, undergirds the notion that the press is anti-Trump. You know, we are sitting here talking about this, and it may sound as though we are anti-Trump. We are anti-lie.
Yeah.
That's kind of our role. And there is just no way to avoid hostility to a blatantly untruthful administration.
I mean, the whole administration, Rex, is a golly Martha.
David's alluding to something that I used to say. We actually even, for a while at the Times Union, created a little feature called Golly Martha, because I wanted to put on the front page every day, back when the print newspaper really mattered, a one story every day that was a golly Martha. I would picture this typical guy sitting there next to his bowl of Post Toasties in the morning. By the way, you know, they don't make Post Toasties.
No, they don't.
It's tragic.
It's because we're all old.
Yeah. He'd say to his wife, golly, Martha, listen to this, as he looked at his
right.
newspaper. And so we do need golly Marthas, actually, still in the news.
Well, and it's, you know, when people try to say avoid it, I mean, it's the definition of news. You can't avoid it. You got the president of the United States saying things like Ukraine attacked Russia. That has to be reported. That has to be blatantly called out as a lie. And then you have guys like Mark Zuckerberg of Facebook. Now, you watch John Oliver's show. He did a whole thing on it. And it kills me that here's this guy doing a semi-comedic program, telling a lot of truth in it, going back and playing Zuckerberg's testimony to Congress, where he was certainly not going to allow hate speech and other things on his platform, and they were fact-checking it. Now he says it's censorship.
Yeah.
The evolution to, again, cozy up, because it's a business, to the person who could hurt him, and that being the Trump administration.
So Facebook allowed a post, for example, saying that measles cases surged 2,042% in a Texas county following a free vaccine campaign, coincidence or connection. So it looks like a real headline. The fact is, vaccines are highly effective. They do the job. The reason that there is a measles outbreak in Texas is because too few kids are getting vaccinated now. And you would think that a responsible entity would preclude something like that from being published. But that's not what Facebook does anymore. You know, we wouldn't publish that in our newspapers. You wouldn't hear that on the air here at WAMC.
Yeah, we try to take great care. In the past, we've talked here about letters to the editor, and we have been flooded lately with letters mostly about the Trump administration. And I would say that, you know, there's plenty that are pro-Trump, plenty that are against Trump. But as much as possible, we try to fact check those things. And if there's any doubt, we just reject them. We don't want to amplify these sort of false like narratives that we've heard a lot of times as talking points. And you do hear right-wing media reiterating, repeating these, and they're just hoping through drumbeat. So we try to, again, we try to tell both sides in terms of opinion, but we have to be careful about it.
I like your use of the word amplify. And one of the things that we in the credible media fall prey to is the tendency to amplify falsehoods by talking about, here's something that was said and it's not true, and it's hard to get the part about and it's not true. So including the whole thing about measles and the vaccines, we're repeating this, and to some people it sounds like, oh, maybe there is a kernel of truth to this.
Yeah, I see. The very act of passing along is the truth-telling part of it actually amplifies
in cases, and doesn't mean we shouldn't do it. It's part of the conundrum.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, actually, one of the key facts that we are now looking at is the local impact of some of these federal stories. This is, of course, what we always look for, we who are engaged in the local media. We want to see how what is really getting folks' attention as they look at what's going on around the country has an impact in our communities where we can report on it. And that's certainly what we're finding is true with what Elon Musk is up to, the Doge cuts. In our community, for example, there was initially a report that the Leo O'Brien Federal Building in Albany was on the for sale list. Then, of course, the General Services Administration withdrew the for sale list entirely.
Was it more than 24 hours before all that changed? No, it was. Well, we're going to look at it more.
Not
we pulled some off the
back.
List, and yeah. Right, but still, people put it out, shed some light on it, and it got pulled.
We need to know about this sort of thing, and it sometimes seems like these stories are far away, but it's a relevant point that 80% of the federal workforce lives and works outside the metropolitan D.C. area.
Your Congressman Riley was on our air this week talking about Social Security offices closing.
Yes.
And you've got the CHIPS and Science Act being threatened. You've got congestion pricing down in New York City. You've got the tariffs and the impact of power in New York from Canada. I mean, there's a lot of issues that are affecting the entire region, and it all gets down to that local news.
How do you find, Miles, these days, how do you keep up with that if you have a, you know, a staff that I'm sure is considerably shrunk from the glory days of a decade ago? How do you keep up with that kind of thing?
So it is daunting in that, you know, we've actually tried to get comments from the National Park Service about what's going to happen possibly to the battlefield, and we're still waiting to hear from them. We've asked a few times over the last couple of weeks. But we've tried to do stories by talking to the local folks. We have a story in today's Gazette and some of the other papers that we operate about concerns about this CHIPS funding being withdrawn. So, you know, in Luther Forest at the tech park there, up at Global Foundries, and then in Albany at Nanotech. So we've talked to a handful of politicians. It's along party lines. The Democrats are certainly willing to express concerns that this is a wrongheaded decision if the Trump administration goes ahead and nixes it. But employees, especially federal employees at this point, I think there's so much fear right now. So that has been tough, Rex, especially having a really skilled, seasoned reporter who knows how to develop. And these are not just a one-day story when you need to get somebody willing to talk. So we've had little glimpses. We also heard about 100 layoffs in a federal office in Albany about a week ago, and we still haven't found out yes or no what's going to happen. So is it true or not? There's a lot of rumors going around. So we have not reported it yet, and I don't want to name the agency because we don't know if it's true. But, you know, we're going to keep pushing. And my hope is through time, some federal employees, like is happening out west, where especially in some of these towns, they're completely dominated by the Park Service, firefighters, rangers, etc. Those folks are having more of a sense of speaking out because whole towns are affected. So Hopefully that will happen here.
It's challenging for a newspaper to keep up with. You feel like a cat chasing balls of yarn, like the strings of yarn here and a string of yarn there, because so many different orders are coming down and how to keep up with them and decide. And the situations are fluid. They're going to get laid off. They're not going to get laid off. They have to answer the email. They don't have to answer the email. So which stories do you run after? There was a good story early on, and I forget which entity published this, but when USAID came down on that, around Burlington, there was a lot of people who have lost their job that you wouldn't even think about. They were contractors who were working for companies that were serving USAID, lots of them, so that it was having a big effect on the community.
The difficulty,
same thing you're
for,
trying to do.
Difficulty for reporters is that the officials who might be in a position to give you factual information are now all partisans. And they are going to obscure the facts of this. The Idaho Statesman, I think, is what you were pointing to, the Forest Service issue out there, because 60% of the state of Idaho is actually owned by the federal government.
Yeah.
And so while the assertion from Idaho's all-Republican congressional delegation was, well, we're not going to touch the things that are really important to Idahoans, investigative reporter out there for the Statesman found out that they were what had been cut were trail crews, biologists, botanists, educators, people who actually are engaged in fire mitigation. So we won't know the impact of this until the fire season
fire
comes.
Fire mitigation, and cancer research, and say, oh no, the Democrats, the left is paying people to go to community meetings to complain. So now we shouldn't show up and answer for the problems these cuts are causing.
So if your member of Congress is not showing up, and if your member of Congress is not responding to reporters, as that has been the case, for example, throughout the tenure of Elise Stefanik as a representative in Congress from Northern New York, she has basically cold-shouldered most media, I think. Is that a verb, pulled shoulder?
I think we can accept that.
Oh, okay, thank you. So if that's the case, you are left with only the partisan outlets. You're left with just the digital influencers who don't have the same commitment to truth-telling that we see in this studio, that we see in our newsrooms. And it is a difficult place. And I think the only solution I can urge is subscribe to your trustworthy news organizations, donate to public media, support not-for-profit journalism where you find it, and be as well informed as you can.
Yeah, because the other side is doing the one thing that propagandists do. And I'll share it with you in a song. Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts. They repeat the information over and over again, the lie, until you can't get it out of your head. That's how it works. The advertisers know they can repeat the message and then it'll be stuck, and the propagandists know it too.
Why are we dissing O'Reilly Auto Parts?
We're not. It's just the one I remember. I can't forget it.
He remembers the jingle. Where else been in public media can you get David Gustina singing for you on the radio?
I'm sorry. That was terrible.
That's all. It's fine. What a great opportunity for conversation here, folks. This is The Media Project. That was David Gustina, our producer. Miles Reed, editor of the Daily Gazette, is here. Barbara Lombardo, formerly editor of the Saratogan and the Troy Record. I'm Rex Smith of the Upstate American. We thank you for joining us, and we hope you come back again next week for The Media Project.
Now, newspapermen are such interesting people. They used to work like hell just for romance. But finally, the movies notwithstanding, they all got tired of patches on their pants. They organized...
The Media Project is a national production of WAMC, Northeast Public Radio. This week's projectors include former Times Union editor and current Upstate American Substack columnist Rex Smith, Barbara Lombardo, adjunct professor at the University at Albany and former editor of the Saratogian, and editor and vice president of the Daily Gazette, Miles Reed. You can listen to The Media Project anytime at WAMCpodcast.org or anywhere you get your podcasts. I'm your producer, David Gustina. Thanks for listening.
Publishers are such interesting people. Their policy is an acrobatic thing. They claim to represent the common people. It's funny, Wall Street never has complained. Ah, but publishers have worries, for publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give 3 cheers for freedom of the press.